Thank you, Johnny. And thank you for everyone here. I guess we're not meetinged out yet. And I know when they called me and asked me to share, and I got that phone call, I was all excited. Oh, yeah, you know, it's been a while since I shared at one of the CPR CNA conventions, and not that I haven't missed any, but I thought it'd be one of them big workshops or big nights. And she says, yeah, it's midnight on Saturday night. I said, shh. But you know, I've been taught, and it's worked well for me all my recovery, that is, you never say no to service. Because I've been going to bed quite a bit earlier here recently, but those days, you know, it's good to keep me up and get me out. You know, this is, I want to thank the Central Maryland area for asking me, and the CPR CNA Convention Committee, or the corporation, and everybody that's involved, and I know how much it's involved. I was the vice chair of the second CPR CNA back in 87, back in Bethesda, Maryland, or not in Crystal City, Virginia. And the third one was in Bethesda, Maryland. This is my convention. This is like my springtime, get up and go. You know, every year I live at the beach, so I'm lucky. You know, this is a break for me, and so I get my batteries recharged every year. And so I'm honored to be speaking here tonight. And when she said we'd be sharing on the 10th step, you know, I thought, well, you know, that's probably what I need to talk about then, because God never gives me what I don't need. I mean, I'll avoid things. I will manipulate things, of course. I will deny things. But it's obviously I need to talk about the 10th step. That's what I needed to do. So I want to share a little bit about, like I said, I got clean in 1986 in Northern Virginia and got involved right away. I had a great sponsor. He's in San Diego now. There's a lot of stuff tonight that Ronnie was sharing that I was also from New Jersey, and I also started shooting dope back in the 60s and, you know, and have all those little issues that we have from shooting dope today follow me. But I've also been blessed. I've had a very good run in recovery, and it's time to share some stuff. I got moved to Virginia Beach in 1988. It was a geographical thing. I want to. Also, it was an opportunity to move, to go to the beach. It was a dream. So I moved down there on a lark, didn't know a soul, and started putting my life back together. Of course, I had quit smoking right there at about 18 months clean and put on about 40 pounds and got to then there to the beach a little heavier than I normally was, because when I got clean, I was about 136 pounds. So I got down there and right away, you know, got to walk on the beach and walk on the boardwalks and just doing what it took to do and you know, getting involved in the local area and doing some service work, taking some meetings into the jails. It was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it forced me to meet new people, forced me to do new things, and it, you know, just pushed me along. Because if you don't force me to do something, to change or to recover or whatever, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to just ease back and sit down and go out the back door or whatever I have to do. So my sponsor then, he was a gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps. He got bumped out to Iwo Jima or Guam or one of them places out there in the South Pacific, because they found all our four steps and everything else on the Pentagon's A-frame computer. And they sort of like, they were doing a security check. You know, at the Pentagon, and actually he was at Henderson Hall and the Marine Corps, and narcotics kept on coming up, you know, when they were, this is some time ago too, and so it triggered some kind of security warning or whatever, and of course, and they went in there, and he had been keeping all this stuff on us, or our sponsees, you know, on the mainframe computers at the Pentagon and stuff, so And you know what? They still, like I said, all he did was transfer him. He never lost a grade, I don't think. He had been bumped down from gunnery before. So it was just one of those funny things. You know, if you don't get clean, if you haven't been around, I mean, you have to stick around for a while for all these little funny things to happen in your life. And but he was, like I said, he was the gunny sergeant. He was, when we worked the steps, it was we worked the steps. We read the step, we wrote the step, and we would sit down and go over the step, and he'd go over to line by line, and what's this mean, and what does that mean, and I'll never forget my second step I did with my sponsor. He took me to one of these steakhouses or whatever, and I was never so embarrassed in my life that he had my step work out there. It was on the table and stuff. The waitress came up and wanted to take our orders. I'm like, put that stuff away. And he's like, no, I don't, you know. And she's, all you're doing step work, you know. I said, oh my God, I thought I was going to die. Because I still wanted to look good. I still want to look good, but I really wanted to look good then. I don't want people to know, you know, who I was or what I was. And he pushed me out there in front of this. And so then when we got, and of course the culmination of the steps, each step is worked in order. And there's a reason for that, because you just don't be jumping in to a 9-step or a 10-step or whatever when you got 60 or 90 days clean, because you don't understand the consequences or the spiritual principles or the meanings behind the steps. I mean, it's good to be able to intellectualize them, but until you internalize a step, you really aren't doing anything, you know. And but you have to do it all to begin with. You have to start someplace. And because I can remember my first go around with the 10-step was, I want you to call me every night. I'm going to be your sponsor. I want you to call me every night. And gave me that pamphlet, Live in the Program. And this is what I want to hear. You know, and that was worked for me, because, you know, I didn't have any background, of course, in recovery. And that's the thing about Narcotics Anonymous, that this is for everybody. I mean, and we have the literature, and we have the experience now today. There's lots and lots and lots of people with some time in Narcotics Anonymous. Now, you can never say that there's no time in Narcotics Anonymous, because there's guys that I sat with tonight downstairs, and all of us got clean together back in 85, 86, 87, and they're all still here. Of course, we all have the same sponsors. So something was working then, and it's still working today. And there's a lot of recovery. But he said, you call me every day. And this is some of the pieces I want to hear from. You know, I mean, have you harmed somebody today? You know, did you make amends to that person today? What's an amend? You know, and he taught me that an amend is not just saying to somebody, well, I'm sorry. Because, you know, I was always sorry. I was sorry my whole life. I was a sorry piece of shit is what I was. I mean, people don't want to hear that I was sorry. They want to see a change. And he explained to me, it's like, if you want to amend the Constitution, they amended the Constitution. They made a change to the Constitution, to something different. And so it's like, it's not about what we say, it's about what we do. It's like, you don't go back and do the same old thing over and over again and keep on making that amend. If you're not ready to change, then you might as well just go ahead and just let them be mad at you or something, or let them talk shit about you or something. But no sense in wasting a good step if you ain't going to change nothing. And also, one thing that I've always shared with my sponsees too, and he shared with me then, was that it had to be done within 24 hours. He says, you don't sit around and wait a week or two or whatever. It's like, or when it benefits me, say, oh, you know, because they come up to me again and I'm sort of embarrassed about something I've done. Or, you know, you make that step, you make that 10th step, and you make it right away. Because if it festers, if it's sitting and it's going on, then you need to put that person back on your A-step list and do a 9-step later on. And that was one of the most practical parts about the 10-step that he could share with me. You know, and reading the step over today, it's always funny. I always like to go back and read in the big, in fact, I read it in the 4th edition. There's an edition I have with me, because they're going to be worth a lot of money one day, by the way. I collect books. So the 4th edition will be the one worth the money. But the idea of our defects will drive us into a corner that we can't get out of clean. We're getting back to the beach, to Virginia Beach. As I said, I got down there and then I did well with the area. Went on to become an ASR and then RSR and out the world and world policy and all that stuff. And I got to meeting people from all around the country. But you know what? I would go into a room, I would go to a table, I would go to a workshop, and automatically set up us and them. I don't know whether this is something that I put in my head, you know, because we were the East Coast NA, and they had the West Coast NA, and we had these little baby blues, and we had this fourth edition, and we had all these issues, and it just seemed like every time I go to one of these workshops or something, there would be a division. There would be, and this is in Narcotics Anonymous, this is in World Service, this is automatically going to the table. And what it was, there was no division, it was me. It was me. Because there was honestly people there that were healthier than I was, that actually were able to see past and see through all that stuff, but yet I still didn't have that trust or that love or that recovery needed to do some of that healthy service work that you know, that was supposed to be, we were supposed to be doing. I mean, I was going into a meeting or going into a workshop or going to something with that mindset that I'm right, you're wrong, I don't want to hear nothing. And but you know, it was always good because after a long day like that, we'd always get together and we'd go eat. Of course, probably a lot of us don't need to do it, but that was the good part. You know, we'd be able to put our differences aside at the end of the day and go off and gather, maybe go to a meeting, somebody'd have a car, we'd be in some strange city, and we'd get together, go to a meeting, or go get something to eat. And that's how I learned to be able to get along with others. You know, when I was going to Catholic school and them nuns did all that little check mark stuff, I never got that works and plays well with others. In fact, I still don't. That's just, but I recognize it today for what it is. It's just part of my recovery in progress, is trying to get past all that. And like the things I learned in Narcotics Anonymous through service work, I carried on later on in life. Like I said, at the beach, I did something I always wanted to do as a kid and opened up a bookstore at the oceanfront. And that was like my love. I just, that was my favorite thing. I was just so happy, and I was quite successful. I got involved, and I can remember, you know, being, you know, a merchant at the oceanfront, and these guys came in one day, these normal people from the beach, and they said, we want you to join our association, our retail association. I said, sure. You know, all proud and everything. You know, I said, they know who I am. You know what I mean? It's like, do you know who I am? And they're inviting me to join this retail association, the Resort Retail Association. And so I went to the meeting, of course, that same old stuff that I took with those World Policy Committee meetings and World Conference meetings and those conferences up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania and stuff, all that argumentative stuff and all that, take sides and don't take no hostages, and I carried that stuff with me. And they loved me. It's like they'd set me up. They'd say, we need to have this done. We need, and then they see me coming, and they would, I'd be leading the banners and stuff, and sure enough, they had me being treasurer. You know, I said, do they know who I am? They didn't really know who I was. They just know I didn't drink or smoke or whatever, and that was enough. We didn't need to go anywhere else. And then, you know, then they made me vice president of this association. And I'm like, then things start getting bad. I'm getting invited to all the fancy parties and the political things and rubbing elbows with city staff and everything, and calls and calls from the newspaper and one of quotes and everything. And I'm like, my God, it's like my ego just went crazy. And all along, I'm not working no 10 step now. Trust me, I'm not. I'm running right. I'm out of control. And then they made me president. Now it's really, it's like, so I had all these, again, I'm not working any steps. So this, because this is civic duties. This is stuff that, like, this is post-12-step recovery. This is like carrying the message, but, you know, into the community. And, but I was definitely not working no 6 and 7. I wasn't working no 9 or 10 or whatever. I mean, I'm just running riot, running, you know, just self-will. And they made me president. And things just went Ted's self-will. And I could see the stuff coming out all along, you know, but of course I still go to 5 meetings a week, and, you know, and I'm still a counselor too, and I'm teaching groups and stuff like that. But I could recognize it, but everything was going good. I was making money and had a nice home and, you know, the car and the motorcycle and the bike, living on the beach and stuff. It's like, of course, and some other things that weren't so healthy in my life either. But my relationships with other people, in and out of the rooms, but getting back to the community, because I'm supposed to be, I've got 10, 15 years now, and I'm doing this stuff with the community, and everybody's patting me on the back, and you're doing a good job. Well, not everybody, but most of the people. But, of course, I don't even want to recognize the people that are supporting me. I don't want to listen again because I've got that closed mind. I've got that, you know, you're only out to get me. I don't want to hear what you have to say. I don't want to hear, you know, I wasn't going back home at night and calling my sponsor saying, well, you know, so-and-so from the Restaurant Association, you know, because I got a real hard-on for them, and they did this to me, or they did that to me. And it's like they were doing stuff to me, you know, it was all personal and everything. And you know, and it was like, playing a big game of chess, you know, manipulating this, calling this person, want to set this thing up, you know, or if you want to vote on something, you know, to get something done. And if it wasn't working any test stuff for these guys. And, of course, in the meantime, this stuff got carried over to me. I was the president of my condo association. And then here last 2 years ago, I was going to run for city council, and then, of course, as politics is, well, go ahead, we'll sit on this campaign here, and when I was done, they made me a commissioner. So I still am a commissioner in the resort in Virginia Beach, even though I live in the Outer Banks. So, but again, I had to get away, and I had to, you know, after time came, and I could see and I could recognize it, because this pain, this stuff got into my head. Things started falling apart. Business started getting slow. My personal recovery started suffering. My relationships with people, with friends and stuff started falling apart. And you know, it's time to get honest. You know, and the honesty was like, I was out of control. No matter how many meetings I was going to, no matter how well I was doing on the outside, you know, how important or how successful I was, inside I was dying. I was suffering. And, you know, this is with 20 years clean. So, by the grace of God, again, because, like, again, I don't make a lot of my decisions out of, like, God, that's a great idea, you know, or maybe that's something I should do. Maybe I should take somebody's advice. Maybe my sponsor, just financially things got to the point where I needed to shut the store down. I needed to take some time off. I needed to sell my house, you know. I want a big home, you know, that I had mortgaged the second and third time and stuff, and to do all these travels for all these world conventions and everything. And I ended up selling stuff and moving stuff, and then ended up just taking a little old place down the Outer Banks and taking some time, and whereas now it's nice and quiet. You know, there's nobody there. I've watched myself to not try to get too involved or try to volunteer in too many things either, because not to have to learn my lesson. It's like, because in my head it's already, well, I know what I'll do next time. I'll do it right next time. And, you know, but, like, oh, and you know what? I didn't even talk about using, because, you know, that never came. That was really, I can't honestly say that the thought never crossed my mind, but it really didn't cross my mind. But it's not the using part of it that's the bad part, because I knew what I was doing wasn't right. You know, and I had heard it from people that loved me. I had heard it from people that cared about me. And you know what? And those folks still supported me no matter what, you know, because the pain is what will motivate the change, the pain. And one thing I will say about responsibility, you know, the longer we're around here, and I'm a firm believer that we need to be in a community, that we should all live our dreams. We should all, I mean, and I've met all my dreams. you know, people should get out there and do whatever you want to do. I mean, and just live, because it's not just about going to meetings and working the steps. I mean, it's about that and sponsoring and having a sponsor, to having a home group and taking H&I meetings in and all. But it's also about living and about, you know, your family. Today, I joke about, I'm going to write a book soon about, called The Grain of Narcotics Anonymous. Because, you know, I came here, I had a full head of hair, and, you know, and a full mouth of teeth and all that stuff. And I didn't know that, you know, as a result of shooting dope and stuff like that, you know, the hepatitis stuff and all those issues that come with it. I mean, and today there's whole bunches of us that are dealing with things. Also, my mother has Alzheimer's now, and she was brilliant. And I've watched her over the past 3 or 4 years just, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable to watch a person that she worked for a Beltway Bandit company, she was head of security, and today she's just as goofy as hell. To me, she's mom still. You know, I almost didn't recognize it in the beginning, because always, oh, that's just mom. You know, mom's just always been a little bit, but she's fairly well advanced now. And my father, who's in Philadelphia, just had triple bypass surgery at 80 years old with no resources. So I've been up to Philadelphia twice here in the past 2 months. I've been to Florida. I go every 90 days to see my mother, because that's all she wants. She says, when are you coming to see me? When are you coming to visit? When are you coming to live here? And boy, I tell you, I'd like some days just to give everything up and say, just live there, but it's too hot. It's too hot. But the grade of Narcotics Anonymous, I thought that when I got clean back in 86 that, you know, I'd meet somebody and have a family, you know, and have the car and the house and the stable job, you know, and retire. And I still haven't grown up. You know, I still haven't grown up. I'm still like, tomorrow maybe. Tomorrow I'll meet that person tomorrow. But as the hair gets thinner and gets grayer, and a lot of the guys, the folks that I used to argue with out there at World Service and all, I see them in wheelchairs, and people are passing away left and right, dropping dead, and you know, as a result of our disease. The days, you know, it's the reality, is it, that we're getting older. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful as hell that I can get up here tonight and think back to the first convention in Annapolis, where there was probably 250 people, 300 people. I remember snow on the ground outside and all, and they sent me to go spy on them, because we had the next convention from the Norvana area, and being part of that convention, and we oversold the banquet, and I'm telling you, we had like 800 banquet tickets we had sold, and they couldn't feed but 400 people. That was the second convention of the CPR Center. That's the story there, and people were gracious about it. People were gracious about it. They said, don't worry about it. The hotel did what they could do. Members just said, don't worry about it. We'll get something to eat someplace else. You know, we'll do what we have to do. And the third convention. And I remember being on the CPR-CNA steering committee when we formed the corporation that started this part of the convention and moved this thing here to Ocean City. So I've been blessed. And I say, and getting the 10th step, I just need to know to recognize when I have done some harm and when I've done wrong, is not just to say I'm sorry, but to make changes. And, you know, all that political stuff in Virginia Beach, you know, I saw a lot of respect there. People respect me, and they know who I am, and they know what I do. And I still get those phone calls all the time saying, listen, I have a son, I have a daughter. Could you speak to my husband? You know, and these are people that are way up the food chain, and you know, that they sort of keep stuff hidden, and the police department comes to me and they ask me to speak to the police officers under the radar, and which I do. So, you know, it's all been a blessing, and there's so much good in my life. Of course, there's still a lot of areas of my life I need to work on, and that's the reason I'm still here today, because I'm a work in progress. You know, I'm a work in progress. So thanks for letting me share tonight.
Thanks for sharing, Ted. And I've known Ted since 89, and I too had hair when I got here. Our next speaker will be Diana from Susquehanna.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm an addict named Diana.
Hello, Diana.
Hi. I was hoping once I saw the book and like that, I was hoping you all would realize there's a bonfire meeting going on right now. So, you know, because I've been nervous. I have been so nervous for probably about the past week. And I'd like to thank the convention committee, especially Stephanie A., for asking me to come here. And I don't think it was a coincidence. I don't think it was something pulled out of the hat. I think it was my higher power, my God, saying, you need to do your 10th step again. You need to wake up, Diane. And this was my wake-up call about a month ago. I'd like to thank my husband for putting up with me this last month and helping me along. So, I got to go back and start from the beginning because it's who I am. It's what I'm about. And I grew up, and I was in this nice middle-class little family, and my dad was a police officer, and I had three older siblings, and, you know, I was the baby. I got just about anything I wanted, and I was very close to my next sister growing up. And then she went through the teenage years. I was like 5 years younger than her. Hey, where's my playmate? What's going on? I felt alone. I felt abandoned. And in school, I was in school. I felt like I didn't fit in anywhere. I was taken from the second grade from a public school and put into private school. Well, I don't know about you, but by second grade, there's starting to be little cliques already. And I felt like I didn't belong to any of those cliques. See, the problem was that I see now, there was about maybe five girls that I did hang with that I was in that clique. But there was maybe 15 other people in that room that didn't click with me. And don't they know who I am? even in second grade. Come on, man. Everybody's got to love me. I can't focus on these five people who accept me and want to be my friend. I have to feel left out and afraid and separated because there's one person in the corner who might not like me. And I mean, this is before the drugs. Sure, my sisters taught me that on New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve, my mother makes whiskey sours, and she keeps them in the freezer at the bottom of the stairs. And if we go in the bathroom on the second floor and we get the little Dixie cups that you use for rinsing your mouth, and you sneak down the stairs, because by now they're all feeling good and having fun in the living room, and you just take that Dixie cup, you open the freezer, and you fill it up, and you run back upstairs and laugh like hell. And you sleep real good that night. I learned that. And then, but the obsessive compulsive behavior, that need to feel part of that bunch, didn't stop there. You see, I started growing up, I started changing, but I wanted to feel cool. I wanted to be in the in crowd. So I didn't start drugs right away. Well, I did start cigarettes, like I said, is the first drug I started. And, beer once in a while. But I tell you what was even worse than that. There was this boy, he lived the next block down, okay? Let me go there, I gotta tell you. And I thought he was just, he was so cool. He was cooler than ice cream, man. You know, he was just cool. He was there. And I thought that if I was his girlfriend, then I would be cool too. And then everybody in the neighborhood would have to respect my coolness. And then everybody would love me. So I slept with that guy. I traded myself for trying to get that feeling. And I came into NA and I said, no, I've never prostituted. No, I didn't have anybody hand over cash. But I started early prostituting. I was willing to trade my dignity. I was willing to trade my body so that I didn't feel left out. Because I thought, hey, I'm female. I got what you guys want. I know how to feel in the bunch. It didn't work like that. Because each and every time I felt more degraded. I felt even worse inside. That cavity, that hole grew bigger and bigger. And eventually, I think the guy went to jail or something. I just stopped seeing him. I don't know. Maybe he moved. But You know, then I had to feel part of the next cool bunch who was doing drugs, who was getting high. So I, like a fish to water, I'm going to go. I'm going to get high. I'm going to do it. And I would be out with my sister, and she was in her active addiction, and we would go to a movie and try to ask somebody where the closest liquor store was, because we're gonna sneak some stuff in, and the girls in the bathroom give us directions, and they were pretty bad directions, or we were pretty drunk, we didn't understand, I don't know, but you know, we ended up getting thrown out of the movies because we were fighting with these girls for giving us bad directions. We go to a concert. Maybe fighting with somebody there, get thrown out. It was our lifestyle that we would get thrown out of places. And I got to tell you that, because later on in my life, there was a lot of little seeds planted. I like to call it God prodding me along the way. But I heard them said they were seeds, and I can accept that. You see, when I was in the height of my addiction, I was in Baltimore City. I was living in an abandominium. I was 87 pounds, okay? I over double my weight now. Unfortunately, it's double. But you know about that. My sister had come down to the city, and she was talking to me, and I noticed something different, but I didn't know what. And I had these tennis shoes, these cow shit green tennis shoes, okay? And they were about a size and a half too big. But you see, my money was earmarked for other things. I couldn't buy shoes. No. Yeah, if the church down the corner wasn't giving them to me, I ain't have it. That's all it was. And so my sister, I'm like, yeah, well, you know, if you give me $20, I could probably go buy me a pair of shoes. And my sister said, no, let's go to the store. So I said, okay, all right, let's go to the store. And we pick out a pair of shoes, one that weren't green and one that actually fit, and we're standing in line. Now, this is the same girl that I was getting kicked out of everywhere with, okay, because of the fighting. And somebody come and pushed in front of her in line and was like standing there, and I'm like, oh, shit, man, I can't get the $20 from her, and I ain't going to get the shoes because we're going to get kicked out for fighting this girl, for butting in front of my sister. And something miraculous happened. My sister stood back, and she got this look on her face. I could see her deciding. I knew that look. You know, I'm like, okay, I got you back. And she looked up at the person, and she said, you must be in a big hurry. Please, get in front of me. And I'm like, damn, what happened to you, Janet? You know, what's going on there? And, you know, so that was one of those seeds. She's doing something different. Something's going on. A little bit later, I get this, this police officer invited me to Central Booking. Okay, he invited me to Central Booking for a few hours. I figured it was, you know, like a get-together. And it was an offer I couldn't refuse, okay? And I'm sitting there in a Central Booking, and I don't know if you guys have ever seen the cartoons where, like, there's this devil on one shoulder and this angel on the other shoulder. Well, I'm sitting in the room, this cell, and I got that, but it wasn't the little characters sitting on your shoulders. It was one woman on one side of the room and one woman on the other. And the one woman, we was talking about how we got caught, where we got caught, what we got caught with, and what we were going to do when we got out. Okay? And we was making plans. All right? We was going to do the same stupid shit again. We was making plans. Now this other woman, I got talking to her, and she didn't look at me with pity. She looked at me with empathy. She, from the look on, I can still see her look in my mind today. From the look on her face, she knew the pain I was feeling. She knew what I was going through. And I was like, why are you here? And she just told me something about, had to remind her son that she came from North and Greenmount or something. And it was some kind of domestic she had going on, but she was talking to me about, I don't have to live like this. And now, looking back, I say, yeah, she was in a 12-step program, and I would love to meet her again. But At the point, it kind of scared me. I mean, I felt, while I was talking to this woman, I felt a peace come over me. I felt at ease, and I knew that what she was talking about was what I wanted. Unfortunately, at that point in my life, I didn't have the courage. But it was a seed, because you see, when I left there, I got both of their phone numbers. One on one end, one on the other end. I did. I didn't call either one of them. Because the girl who was using, and we were making plans to use, I figured that she was trying to set me up. She was really a cop in this in this cell, and she was going to set me up. And the other woman who wasn't using, that wanted me to call and talk to her, I figured, you know, I wanted to stop, and I wanted what she had, but I was too terrified. I was too ashamed of myself. I couldn't do it. So I didn't call her. But I thought about her a lot. I could see that look on her face. I could see her looking at me like that. And, you know, I finally come around to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and I was relieved. I was so, so relieved. My thinking, I wanted to stop. I couldn't stop. There was nothing I could do. So I went to court on this thing that I was arrested on, and I told the judge, I said, Your Honor, let's proceed on a statement of facts. Let's not even go there. I'm not going to contest what this officer says. And he says, do you realize you can go to jail for 5 years? Yes, sir. Because my warped mind was saying, if you go to jail, you'll be away from this person that you're in a relation, an abusive relationship with. You won't have to use, and your life will get better. So I was looking forward to go into jail that day. And I might even get a sandwich. And it didn't happen. He gave me a probation before judgment. So a couple, maybe 3 or 4 days later, I decide, okay, I'm in this abusive relationship. I know how to do it. I'm going to have this guy kill me. Because I was too much of a coward to kill myself. I was too much of a coward to stop using. So I figured, well, last fight we had, I had 4 concussions, 3 broken ribs, a dented eyeball. Hey, it wouldn't be much to push him to kill me, so I got it. So that's what I did. And by the end of the night, it took like 4 people to pull him off of me. But I went to my mother's house at maybe 3 in the morning, and I sat on her steps till she woke up. And I said, you got to call my sister because I can't stay here anymore. I can't live like this. And I came to Narcotics Anonymous. She chewed me out all day long. She was yelling. And then she took me to a meeting. I don't know what was in her mind. But anyway, I was too afraid to go back. I didn't want to use. I was done. And I find out through sticking around here that I never have to use it. That was a choice I made. I don't have to. And, you know, when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, it wasn't all rosy and fun and fine and everything was wonderful, because I got here and I listened to people tell me, well, the only thing you have to do is not use. You can do all this other stuff that you enjoy, just don't use. Well, let me tell you something, I ain't never found it written in the basic text. And that caused me so much pain. That I thought I had to use, but I didn't. I didn't use. But I will tell you this: here I was, and now this is that same person who was trading sex for acceptability. What am I going to do in Narcotics Anonymous? It might not have been Larry, Moe, and Curly, but I found myself a new set of stooges. All right, and I found them guys that was going to give you the shirt off their back as long as you gave them the pants off your ass. You know, and I found them, and I'm not trying to down them, because they were where they were at. You know, and I was still that person looking for acceptance, looking to buy my way in, looking to pay with my dignity, with my, you know, piling up more shame. So what happens? I get 3 months clean, and I find out I'm pregnant. And I say to the guy, I say, you know, I can't have this baby. I can't do this. This was against an abortion? Me? No. And he says to me, you know, if I help you pay for that, then I won't be able to go to the convention. I said, well, that's too goddamn bad. Pony up. You know, because I wasn't going to the convention either. So that was my resentment convention. It was the, I forget which year was it, 97, I think. Yeah. That was my resentment convention. But, you know, so I mean, until there started to be changes in me, I still had all those junky motives. I still had all those junky things that I was doing, and I was still getting the same pain. Now, I lost custody of my children. I had two children when I came into Narcotics Anonymous that I lost custody of. I fought hard to get custody back. By the time I had 6 months, I had custody of both children back. By the time I had 7 months, my oldest child decided that she didn't like the new mom, that she didn't like me because my husband was not of the, well, my, at the time he was my boyfriend, was not of the Keller that she would choose for me. So after a few really good fights, I said, you know what, it's my way or the highway, and she said goodbye. And given up custody after you fought so hard to get it was probably one of the worst things that happened to me. But I didn't use. You know, I didn't use. And I stayed around, and I kept working the program, and I kept doing the steps. And I was a smart, you know, I've always been very, very, very smart person. And I figured 12 steps, 12 months in a year, I'll do one a month. By my first anniversary, we'll be good. I won't have to do this anymore. And, you know, I'm very studious. That's what I thought, you know. I'm done, you know. First year, that's it. I'm done. My sponsor said, whoa there, Nellie. It's not, doesn't work like that. And you can finish it in a year, and I congratulate you, but then we're going to start again. I said, oh, shit. Now the procrastination is going to set in. Because if I have to keep doing them, why should I do them all this year? So the junkie was still there. The junkie's still around. And I tell you what, that junkie head was bobbing up for the last year because I've been getting complacent. I've been finding reasons why I should be at work instead of at a meeting. I've been finding reasons why I really don't have to do a 10th step. And when I got that phone call from Stephanie and she asked me to share, and I was like, oh, God, I'm not ready for this. And she said, yeah, well, you know, we really want you to come down and we'd like you to share. And I said, well, you know, whatever you want me to do, I'm here. I'll do it. Because I was taught not to say no. Somebody asks you to share, you show up. You do it. And that's okay, you know. So about a month or so ago, I said, oh, there's my wake-up call. There's another seed. Another way. God's prodding me in the right direction. Because without that phone call, I would have stayed complacent. I don't care if it was causing fights between me and my husband. You're working 70 hours, you're getting paid for 50, but you're still there. What the hell's going on? But I have to, honey. I'm the boss. That's the most dangerous thing. Have a junkie as a general manager. Okay. You got the power trip. You got the ego. Everybody's saying, Diane, what should I do? Making all the decisions all day long. Oh, I was in there. Yeah. Danger. Danger. But I was too wrapped up in the obsession and the compulsion to actually see. And when I got the phone call and I was asked to do a meeting on the 10th step, I said, oh, shit, maybe. You know, I talked to my sponsor, and she said, yeah, why don't you do one? Oh, ouch. Okay, maybe I will. So I've changed professions now. And Monday, Tuesday will be my first day at my new job, where it's not enough people for me to be the boss. It just happens to be right next door to my old job. Anyway, you know, and it's like the 10th step is, the 4th step showed me where I was screwing up, what I was doing, why, you know, what the problems were. It showed me I'm not trading sex for money. I'm trading sex for a feeling. And I choose how I feel today. I don't let other people choose for me how I feel. You know, if this guy really, really teed me off because I am in the food management business, and I was at Burger King last night, and he scratched the left cheek of his ass, and then he scratched the right cheek of his ass, and then he went to grab the bag to put my food in. I said, oh, hell no. Hell no. And it was late. It was like I thought the only place that was open. I'll go hungry. I'll get it out of a machine. Thank you. But you know, I have to keep remembering, and like all the places that I've been working at, the company I was with is really, really famous for playing musical managers. Okay, you're at one store for a while, then they change it to another store, and then they change it to another store. They're real good at that. So in the year and a half that I was there, I was in four different stores. And each time I left, my staff would say, you know, we really don't want you to go. We love you, Diane. We don't want you to leave. And I owe it a lot to not just working the program, but living it. Because I knew in my stomach, in the gut, that when I came in because I wasn't feeling right, and I started snapping at people and yelling at them, telling them what to do and what not to do, and why the hell don't you have gloves on? You know we got to have gloves on. What's wrong with you? You know, a little bit later, I would go back to them and say, I'm sorry, you know, I really have a lot on my mind today. It was no reason for me to jump at you, but really, you do need to put the gloves on. You know, and they respected that. And I guess I was the only manager there that actually did it. These people were working for minimum wage. And I think the company not only took advantage of them, but of me and everybody else around. And if you don't respect people, then you know, what do you have? And it's not that every day I go home and write because, oh, I'll procrastinate on writing. Don't ask me to write. I wrote for a fourth step for quite a while. I readed it and readed it and readed it and readed it. And finally I was told, no, we got to go over this. And we went over it every day, and we went... It was a lot. It was probably a little bit better than 2 years in length. And I guess it wasn't just a fourth. Maybe it was a fourth, fifth together, because it was in stages. It was in steps, just like everything else. And I don't know. I'm just so grateful for being able to say, well, you know, I did this wrong today. And I don't want to face this person that I just cussed out tomorrow. So you better do something about it today. You know, I can sleep at night now. I have no problems. Actually, I probably sleep too much. But I don't stay caught in the he said, she said, and I don't stay caught in the why didn't you second-guessing myself? Because I actually take that 10 seconds to think about what I'm doing most of the time. You know, that junkie still pops up every now and then and says, oh, yeah, do that. And I jump in and do it, and I feel the pain. You know, like the speaker said, I forget whether it was this, it was last night. He said, you know, try starting some short-term pain for some long-term pleasure. Yeah. I said, yeah, and that's what it is. This is a meeting about feelings. I mean, this is a disease of the feelings. So if I don't want to feel hurt, I'm going to procrastinate as long as I can so I don't perceive that I'm being hurt. And it's never served me. It's never served me well. You know, never. And I thank God today that I don't have to be like that. Now, what has this gotten me in my life? Well, I don't have a bookstore. I wish I did. I missed the meeting on new cars. I don't know where the new car meeting is, but I've been looking for that one. I desperately need one. But what I did get was I was on the, I was asked to be on a PTA. I said, but don't you know I was the one who stole the $195 in candy bar money and smoked it all? But they wanted my opinion. They wanted me on the board with them. And I have principles in my life, things that I'm just not going to stand for. Just because I'm in recovery does not mean I'm your doormat to anybody. You're not going to grope me in the circle. You know, I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. And I'm not your doormat. And I was asked by the mayor of the town that I live in to be on a committee for rental landlords, slumlords. It was against slumlords, and at the time, my landlord happened to be the target. And we had like a moat around our house and no water pressure, and we told them it was a broken pipe, and they told us it was the snow melting. For 2 weeks, it was the snow melting. So we got the city involved, and we started the Harford County's first and only tenants association. Well, I just got put on the blacklist. Nobody's going to rent to me now. He's going to do everything in his power to get me out, and eventually that's what happened. But I got people together, and I got people help. And I truly believe that what we can't do alone, we can do together. Together we can. And it's not just in Narcotics Anonymous. It's in every aspect of my life. And so that's what we did. And here's the funny thing. Here's what God did for me. While I'm standing up for principles and I'm on this subcommittee, and you know, I had a class the night that the subcommittee met, so my husband was my proxy. Thank you again. And we would go over these things that they were talking about in the meetings, and I would give him my input, and he would relay this back to them. And you know, eventually he got us out, but I got a lien on his property, and he can't sell it for the millions of dollars he wants now because he didn't pay me $30. $30, and I put a lien on his property. Now I hold the lien. He's got to pay me when I choose to accept it. You know, at the time in my life, we were forced out of Harford County, and we had to go to Baltimore City. But that just happened to be the year that my grandmother started to die. So I was there for her. I was with her through this dying process. Had I still been in Harford County, it would have been, yeah, I don't think I can make it down this week, Gran. You know, so God did for me what I probably wouldn't have done. And I got to be there with my grandmother. I got to spend the days. I got to watch her. And I said, Gran, you know, whatever you want. What do you want? Tell me. And I'll get you anything you want. And she started, well, I don't know. Let me think about it. And I said, well, you think about it. And I will do whatever you want me to do. And my husband said, what if she asked for a beer? I said, wow, dilemma. Why do you have to ask me these questions? You know, I used to say, you know, a lot. I don't say it so much anymore because he used to say to me, no, I don't know. Tell me about it. That'll piss you off. That'll really piss you off because you want to stay in the hidden you knows. So you don't have to be committed to really meaning anything, but you can feel like you have people backing you. Oh, yeah. Come on. I've been there. I've been there, you know. And every time I would say it, he would say to me, what do you mean by that? I'd say, shut up. I don't want to listen to that. But eventually I started realizing that, you know, that was another defect of my character. I wanted to be in with the group, so I'm trying to get everybody to get on my side without being committed to anything. Oh, wonderful. You know, it's amazing how many ways this program affects our lives. It's just amazing. And the thing of the many gifts, one promise, many gifts. I never realized how many gifts were in my life. I never realized. And you know, right shortly after my grandmother died, I got a place back in Harford County. I was back in my beautiful surrounding again. So, you know, everything happens for a reason. I don't know what the reason is, most of the time until too far afterwards. So I'm trying not to be as angry when it happens now, because there's nothing worse than a junkie who can't control the situation. I'm sorry. And, you know, I acted out recently because they moved me from the one dine-in store that I had to another store that was just a delivery store. And I thought the guy that they moved into the other store had assassinated me. I thought he had, you know, he was a kiss-up, he was this, he was that. He's a drunk, he's an active drunk. He's called my store several times. He was in jail, he's got to blow his car to get it started. And he does, he's got the little thing in his car. And he's still active. So how dare they put him in the store that I was in? How dare they move me 20 miles closer to my house when gas is going up? How dare they let me drive 5 minutes to work instead of 30 minutes to work? How dare they put me in a store where I only have to work my 50 hours, not the 70? But I'm going to assassinate him. And I'm going to be angry, and I'm going to be mad, and that's what I went through. And recently, you know, I've come to terms with, I was acting out on that, and I have since then made amends. And the guy is freaked out because he doesn't understand why I'm actually civil to him now. I don't have to like him, but I'm civil. And if he needs help, I'll let him know. And 10th step in action. You know, 10th step in action. I made my amends. I can sleep at night. And life isn't always a bowl of roses for me. But I'm enjoying life. Life is good. I don't have to use, you know. I don't have to today. And I've had myself so upset and worried about this meeting for so long that I gave myself a cold sore and my stomach's been upset. And I've been just really, really upset, but I needed this. And I want to thank you all for being here and not at the bonfire. And I hope somebody got something. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm going to go sit down.
Be sure I don't grope her when I hug her. we got a few minutes. Is there anybody that would like to come up and share? If not, we'll close her up.